7 years after the invasion of Iraq, the wars continue and so do the protests. The Afghan conference at London's Lancaster Gate. Another attempt by Britain's outgoing Labour government to salvage its legacy.
This has become a war to save Western credibility, to impose its will by force. And that's what, of course, tomorrow's conference here in London is all about.
Nobody who invaded Afghanistan has ever prospered. Even Alexander the Great failed successfully to occupy Afghanistan, and Bob Ainsworth definitely isn't Alexander the Great. A future of a world without war is the vision that we hold up to the people. It's the one I'll be campaigning on in the general election, in Salma Yaqub in Birmingham.
All the surveys show a majority of the British public oppose the war in Afghanistan.
Gordon Brown, USA! How many kids have you killed today?
Yet the numbers at the protests are tiny.
We know there are many people who agree with us, but don't feel the need that they have to come out and protest all the time.
We want it!
Back in 2003, along these same streets, it was all so different.
It was very obvious very quickly that Bush and Blair were going to attack Iraq. We knew this was going to happen, and we spent that year really campaigning around it. We were also increasingly working with some of the Muslims. One of the things I remember them saying so well at one of these early meetings is, we want a million-man march. And we said two things. We said, firstly, it shouldn't just be men. It should be men and women if we're going to have a million people. But secondly, you'll never get a million people marching in this country, which shows how wrong we were, that we totally underestimated the strength of feeling over this.
You've got a real sense in the build-up to it that this was going to be something completely different.
There are lots of demonstrations, really large demonstrations, but there's the 15th of February was just outside my previous experience.
I think we sent 30 coaches down to February the 15th, and that was because we couldn't book anymore, we couldn't physically book anymore.
When we got into the tube stations, none of the barriers, there was no one there, no one manning them. And
it probably took us 4 or 5 hours to get from around Euston to Hyde Park.
People playing music out of sort of windows in houses and cheering it on. And
it's not my common experience that a senior police officer from Scotland Yard walks up to me and says, well, Mr. Ali, we're on the same side this one. This is an appalling war. The size of the demonstration surprised me, and in fact surprised everyone. It surprised the world, it surprised the demonstrators who came out to demonstrate, it surprised the police, and it certainly surprised the British government, which had no idea, really, that hostility to the war was that strong.
There are still tens of thousands of people making their way to Hyde Park. Many of the bridges across the Thames have been closed. And our numbers now, we believe, are getting on towards 2 million people marching for peace in London today on this International Day of Demonstration Against War.
There was an opinion poll done, which showed that one in every 23 households had at least one person on the demonstration, which put it at probably closer to 2 million than 1 million. You know, who knows, when it gets to that size, it's almost impossible to tell.
Today is a unique opportunity.
the people didn't come from anywhere in particular. They came from everywhere. I mean, I know people who marched on that demonstration who were not very political people. It was a protest by citizens trying to stop a war from taking place.
Don't forget how it feels to be part of today. Don't forget what it feels to be in the...
The main reason they came was they knew the politicians and Tony Blair was lying. And people responded to that, saying, "We don't believe you."
Mr. Prime Minister, I'd like to ask you, if you ever listen to your people, do you hear our peaceful fight? Will you consider the views of the people before me before you sleep tonight? You support a law which imprisons murderers, then you permit murders. Who the hell gave you that right?
The reason why I wanted to be involved is just to add my voice. You know, to make sure that people, that I was doing something, that I could actually stand up one day and say, I wasn't happy with this and I did something about it. And I actually missed the coach on the 15th. I sort of got through to about 10 o'clock during the day and I said to my husband, I feel really bad. I feel like I really want to be there. I feel like, you know, this is a really important event and... can we go? And we had like a seven-seater, so we got like, you know, my older children and a couple of my nieces and my sister and brother-in-law, and we all jumped in the car and drove down to London.
Not 390?
I'd not done anything. I was just busy, you know, getting married and having children. But then all these big world events started taking place, and suddenly, you know, I became more interested in watching the news and trying to find out what was actually going on, and it all seemed so unjust and... You know, it kind of piques your curiosity and makes you want to do something more. Some people actually view women being out on the streets as a no-no anyway, you know, with the whole Islamic kind of thing. You kind of get, I get that from a lot of family members who are quite religious and say, well, really, you shouldn't be going out the house. But I think, you know, they're a bit old-fashioned in their views now, you know, because we all have a voice and we all need to be heard. Muslim people are far more politicised, I feel, than, you know, their counterparts of, you know.
Left has a secular tradition in this country, and I think people felt, do we want to get mixed up with people who are religious and who might have some religious beliefs which are quite different from our beliefs, I mean, obviously.
One consequence of the anti-war movement was this. In a major English city, a Muslim woman in a hijab, elected city councillor in 2006 and now standing for Parliament, on a platform well to the left of the Labour Party and with a real chance of winning.
Three teams out doing this bit of the ward. We've got another team out doing the middle bit of the ward. Hi, Ray. Well, I'm in the office.
What we tried to do with respect was to organise a number of those elements of the movement, and I think we did so quite successfully for a while. I mean, it had some of the Muslims, it had George Galloway, it had the SWP, it had different left organisations. Salma Yacoub in particular won a council seat in Birmingham, which she still has.
I was never sort of totally convinced by respect. I just didn't think that it was an alternative that was going to attract large numbers of people. It was perceived by some as a front for the SWP. It was perceived by others as making too many concessions to religious groups. It was never clear what it was. I mean, they found some good people like Salma Yacoub, who was very good. A political party to the left of the existing political parties, in my opinion, can't just be formed on hostility to the foreign policy of the mainstream parties, but would need to have an internal program for transforming Britain. And the forces involved in that demonstration were not interested in that, to be honest.
Out canvassing in Hall Green constituency, Salma Yacoub makes no apology for the fact that her involvement in politics did come out of the war.
My initial political journey is very much around the anti-war movement.
I'm somebody who's born in England, married here, bringing my kids up here, nowhere else I'd rather live. And really, it was a shock for me after 9/11, suddenly feeling I'm an outsider. It was not something I'd ever expected to feel. And for me, the anti-war movement restored that sense of belonging. And I'm really proud that the largest demonstration that's ever happened in this country, in 2,000 years of history of this country, was the anti-war march on 2003, February the 15th. Hello, Gordon,
hello.
All right?
I'm fine, thank you. How are you?
Good, good. I'm Summer Yagul, standing in your area for MP.
As a councillor and on the doorstep, she spends most of her time dealing with nitty-gritty local issues.
Oh. I was at your last meeting, so...
Fantastic.
The only question we've got is about parking.
But for many of her voters, there's no doubt that the war still looms large. And so does Salma's opposition to it.
Yeah,
take
no problem.
Care.
Thank you.
Your time.
No problem.
Thank you.
Good luck.
Thank you very much.
For her, I mean, what she stands for, like the war in Gulf and all that. Definitely. I mean, Labour's caused the war, so I mean, I don't see why we've got to vote for Labour. At least we've got a voice now. So there is a voice out there saying, look, what were you doing is wrong.
But the idea of a Muslim woman coming out in public and making stances was still something quite new. We have our own nutters and extremists, and they'd go up to my husband and say, aren't you ashamed, you know, your wife is speaking out in public? And they'd confuse modesty with actually having an opinion. And I think that's what I'm also proud of, I suppose, is that I've almost normalised the fact that Muslim women can have a public role.
The rest of the day's news now. Two British soldiers have died in separate gun attacks in Afghanistan. They were serving with 1st Battalion, the Duke of Lancaster's regiment in Helmand province. Their families have been told. A man convicted of murder.
I think the British political system was shaken by the war. I think.
What was an easy shot?
I think the lies and the deceit about the war has, you know, stuck a real hammer blow at people's belief in the normal status quo political parties. And it's opened up a space for other political voices.
Dave Hughes has been a trade union activist in Birmingham for almost 40 years.
You've lost it because you were doing much better than the last guy.
I was brought up on a council estate. It was automatic that you voted Labour, or my family voted Labour.
Oh, yeah, another.
It was automatic. I joined a trade union. My parents were trade union members. But nowadays, that's no longer the case.
Long range effort.
I can't believe the goal is scored, Dad.
And in a city like Birmingham, where you see like manufacturing wiped out, people don't see a Labour government delivering for them.
Oh.
Me and Hope, I'd split up with Hope's mum. So I see her every Sunday and Wednesday nights, and occasionally for slightly longer weekends when we get the chance.
Hey.
Dave's daughter, Hope, insists her mum and dad never pushed her into protesting against the war. But they've encouraged her to follow what's happening in the world, not least to people in Afghanistan.
Bigging and bombing them so their family's going to get killed. And it just makes them want to fight for their country. So it's just a real cycle. Like, dad does it, son does it, grandson does it. Great-grandson does it, and I think we should stop that happening.
Before the war in Iraq, most of the inner-city areas were solidly Labour. Now, they're a mixture of Lib Dems, some respect party councillors. It's really fractured the allegiance between whole sections of working-class people and the Labour Party. But certainly, I probably now have got more Muslim friends than I've ever had in my life, you know, through the Stop the War movement and that, I've learned a lot about different cultures, Islam, right.
I think what we've learned is to try to appreciate that people come from different, not just different cultures in the sense that maybe they come from different countries originally, but also that people have a different way of organising politically.
Another new component to the anti-war movement was school students. In 2003, they staged some of the most radical protests.
We marched into Cambridge town. I got arrested, two others got arrested, but it didn't stop the demonstration. People thought it was too important. You know, as well, our right to protest was too important.
K Kate Connolly was a leader of the school walkouts in Cambridge.
I think we desperately wanted to make our voices heard, and you know, it was a global movement. It was happening all around the world. There were huge protests.
This again is the first walkout that we did. Obviously it was very big. It was a lot bigger than any of us expected, any of the ones who were sort of organising it thought it would be. And that's me speaking. But again, you can see like how very young a lot of the people were who got involved. And this was the front page of the Cambridge Evening News.
We decided we didn't want only a few people to strike and then get victimised. So what we did, we had a big petition, and we went round the sixth form, and we said to people, "If we would you walk out against the war if 200 people sign the petition? And we'll only call for the walkout if over 200 people sign it." So we knew that we'd be in a, you know, there'd be a lot of us doing it together. And we did get over 200 signatures.
That was the march that we did into town.
It was such a huge political education, I suppose. Understanding, you know, how to organise things democratically, understanding about world politics, understanding about protest movements. We were learning all of this stuff, and you know, that didn't go away. A lot of people, I think, have remained very politically active.
Yet, what did it all achieve?
People never forgave these politicians for what they did. That's one reason Blair had to leave government here. That's the reason why the Conservative Prime Minister who took Spain into the war, Aznar, was defeated. That is the reason Obama won the primary against Hillary Clinton.
It was also one reason why Prime Minister Brown finally conceded to the demand for a public inquiry into the invasion of Iraq. No one expected much, but it reflected a mood.
The Chilcot inquiry was seen as what it was, a sort of, you know, slightly pathetic, very British cover-up. As well as all those who are
watching this session. When Tony Blair appeared before the Chilcot inquiry, something like 80% of people in the opinion poll said they thought he was lying in his evidence.
What the inquiry did not even try to address was the underlying reason for the war, and for Britain's involvement in it.
The argument that it was just about oil I don't buy, because no one ever denies them oil.
Ali Yassim, 20.
The Iraq war was essentially an attempt by the United States to expand its hegemony and to show all its rivals in the Far East, China, Japan, and the others, that okay, you will have access to the oil, but you have to go through us. We are the big power in the Middle East. There's no one else. You can't compete with us. Blair, Brown, Miliband, Straw, all these guys were complicit in it.
Mr. Blair didn't pay it. None of his children would ever be asked to pay it. Mr. Blair is one of those leaders ready to fight to the last drop of other people's blood.
Why did New Labour do it? Because they believed in it. I think the New Labour leadership believed that their future was tied to Washington. What Tony Blair's instructions to his ambassador who went to Washington was, and I quote, "Get up the arse of the White House and stay there." That's what he was told. The ambassador wrote that in his memoirs.
Lieutenant Jonathan Bracho from Hove, age 24, 2nd Battalion.
The failures in Iraq and the mounting death toll in Afghanistan have been a setback for this North Atlantic alliance.
2nd Battalion, the Light Infantry.
A member of the 4th Regiment Royal Artillery has been killed in Afghanistan. The soldier was shot during a battle with insurgents, his family has been told. The Foreign Secretary.
But has their project been derailed?
Cameron David William Donald, the Conservative Party candidate.
Britain's 2010 general election would be a test. More than any other recent election, this one was a challenge for the two-party system that had dominated British politics for almost a century.
One reason there's a hung parliament is nobody's very keen on any of the parties. There was no enthusiasm for voting Tory, that's absolutely clear, which is why they only got 36% of the vote. And of course, Labour went down to its second worst vote since the Second World War.
But there was no breakthrough for the left or for anti-war candidates.
Roger Duncan Godsith, the Labour Party candidate, 16,000.
2,200.
Salma Yacoub got a respectable 25% in Birmingham Hall Green, but she didn't win. And across the country, the Respect Party's results were much worse.
I think there was the possibility of building a left organisation out of it, but in the end, it wasn't broad-based enough. Had you had more of a proportional system, it would have been easier for Respect to survive.
Faced with economic crisis, had the Muslim community turned back towards more traditional political allegiances?
What surprises me is that so many of them forgot all this so rapidly and voted in huge numbers for New Labour in the 2010 elections, which shows to me that they are basically, essentially, quite a conservative community.
Caroline Lucas, Green Party candidate, 16,238.
The Green Party did manage to get its first ever member of the British Parliament, its anti-war leader, Caroline Lucas.
Thank you so much for putting the politics of hope.
She's a prominent anti-war campaigner. She's a vice president of Stop the War. I'm not saying it's all about the war, because that wasn't the main issue in this election, but I don't think she'd have been in the position to win it if it hadn't been for the war and the disenchantment with Labour which followed.
But no broader alternatives seem to be emerging.
If only the left could get its act together, be a bit more united, I think there's big opportunities, but the problem is we've had those opportunities, and so far, to a certain extent, I think they've been squandered a bit. It's a really frustrating situation to see the possibilities that exist. The scaffolding for it exists. It's just that the content ain't there yet.
I don't think it was squandered. I think it was really wrong to expect it to become anything else. This was not a movement generated by the left. These were not people who were radical by temperament at all, but they were hostile to the war. And therefore, to expect this huge crowd of 1.5 million, or even 1 million of it, to move towards radical politics was just fantasy.
David Cameron has been meeting British troops at their headquarters in Helmand province during his first official visit to Afghanistan as Prime Minister. One visit to a patrol base had
It's not that the anti-war movement has gone away. There are still activists capable of eye-catching initiatives, like this occupation of Parliament Square. And scarcely any politician now dares openly to defend the invasion of Iraq.
In separate newspaper interviews, Ed Ball says the war was wrong, while Ed Miliband says it led to a catastrophic loss of trust in Labour. From Westminster.
All but one of the candidates to lead the Labour Party, now in opposition, hurried to distance themselves from the legacy of Blair and Brown. But the movement has shrunk back to normal protest dimensions.
This is BBC Radio 5 Live.
A Royal Marine has died in hospital in Birmingham after being injured in an explosion in Afghanistan 9 days ago, his family's been told. 300 servicemen and women have now died since operations started.
This is the paradox. Two deeply unpopular and failing wars have traumatised Britain's political establishment.
The NATO governments are running away from this war in Afghanistan now. They know they're losing it, and I think they're desperate to try to find an exit strategy.
The legacy is that it will become very difficult to convince British people of any other escapades of this sort. So new wars are going to be difficult for them to pull off. And I think they know that perfectly well.
Across the country, many sympathise with the suffering of the soldiers and of the Afghans and Iraqis they were sent to fight. Few believe there is any good reason for this. But fewer still seem confident about what might be put in its place.